This week's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They are the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from all around the world. The company is movie buff owned and operated. If you are looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head on over to Diabolik DVD. They are constantly updating their inventory and have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They revamped their website earlier this year, and ordering has never been easier. Some of their latest upcoming titles include Blu-rays for the new release of the film Evil Within, which is just bonkers, the amazing new limited edition Blu-ray of Deep Red from Arrow Films, also from Arrow Video, the new Blu-ray of Basket Case, the recent Blu-ray of Spasms from Code Red, which I just picked up, the amazing new Blu-ray DVD combo of Disconnected from Vinegar Syndrome, and so much more. They also have all of the titles from Agfa, Code Red, Scorpion Releasing, Arrow Video, Vinegar Syndrome, and more. The Shockwaves team loves them, so head on over to DiabolikDVD.com now or find them on Facebook. In case you didn't know, the Shockwaves team is heading to Texas Frightmare this May, and we hope to see you there. Texas Frightmare is the Southwest's premier horror convention and is now celebrating their 13th year. They always have the best guests, the best panels, and you don't want to miss it. Highlights include a sneak preview of Arrow's upcoming restored Last House on the Left release, and it will have cast members Jeremy Rain and Mark Scheffler. Other guests include Clive Barker, several of the Cenobites, including Doug Bradley, all of the kids from It's Losers Club, Tobin Bell, Shawnee Smith, Ron Perlman, Charlie Band, Brad Dourif, Katie Featherstone, and many more. Head on over to TexasFrightmareWeekend.com and get your tickets now. Welcome to episode 91 of Shockwaves. In case you haven't noticed, I'm reading all of the ads, which means I am by myself this week. You just have Ryan Turek in the house. Ryan Turek and Ernie. That's our new show. The whole gang, Rob, Elric, and Becca, they're on their way to the Chattanooga Film Festival. And I am here just holding down the fort. They're going to be doing a special panel. By the time you listen to this, it will be tomorrow, April 7th, Saturday, 3 p.m. And I'm very jealous because they're going to bring Joe Bob Briggs on. Let me tell you guys, I've been spending the last 3 months watching Joe Bob Briggs' Monster Vision and just kind of walking down that nostalgia road because Monster Vision was the one show, not the one show, but it was a very formative show for me growing up, and everything that Joe Bob, laid down in terms of fun facts and jokes and, you know, just his insightful commentary onto the, you know, the really bad movies that he sometimes had on. That was a very big deal to me. So this shout out goes to my co-host. Guys, don't screw it up. Give us a good show. They're going to be recording it this weekend, and you'll be able to listen to it here later this month. For this episode, I wanted to bring on three very special guests that I got a chance to work with last year. We have Jeff Wadlow, director of Truth or Dare, which is opening April 13th, and then his two co-stars of that film, Lucy Hale and Tyler Posey. Lucy, you may know from Pretty Little Liars. She was also in the intro to Scream 4, which is the first time I've ever seen her. And Tyler Posey, of course, comes from Teen Wolf fame. Three great guests. I hope you enjoy this conversation. We kind of got into a little bit of their background in terms of what got them excited about horror, what they were watching when they were kids, and so much more. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and the whole gang will be back next week. All right. right. So this is what happens when you get me solo. You get people that we love to work with here in the Blumhouse family. We've got Jeff, Lucy, and Tyler in the house. Part of the team behind Truth or Dare, opening April 13th, Friday the 13th.
Nice.
That was kind of like the Disturbed guy.
Oh, wow.
When we remake Tales from the Crypt, clearly Tyler should play the Crypt Keeper.
That sounds a little Tales from the Crypt.
You should be the Crypt Keeper.
Hey!
Yeah. You guys, I'm catching you just before the giant junket circuit, aren't
I? It starts tomorrow. It all begins.
Where's it
going
to be? The Four Seasons? Yep.
No, I think we're at the L'Hermitage.
Yeah,
that's French for fancy
hotel.
Never
heard of
that.
Nice.
The L'Hermitage.
So you're warming us up for everything. So this is great.
This is good. Yeah. And you know what? As being someone on the other side who sat in the junket chair and asked questions like, so what did you do to prepare yourself for a horror film? What's your favorite horror movie? What we love to do is get deep into the background of upbringing, because I think if you get into the film industry, you have, you know, obviously a deep-seated love for cinema, and that's got to come from somewhere. Like for myself, my whole experience of not watching Nightmare on Elm Street, but listening to it through a bedroom door while my father watched it, that was fuel for me to go, okay, I want to watch Nightmare on Elm Street and I want to know more about this horror industry. For you guys, I guess right off the bat, you know, what was that film that started it all for you that made you enamored with this business?
Grease for me, believe it or not. And it was because of my grandmother that I think I wanted to entertain, because my grandmother, because I actually started out in music and that was sort of what led me to acting, and my grandmother could not sing. She was terrible, but she knew that I could sing, so she always like encouraged me to like follow that little dream that I had. But I remember vividly sitting on her like living room table every Saturday and Sunday watching Grease. And I think that was like what kickstarted my little girl dreams.
Here
I am.
Adorable.
Tyler, tell us about
the exact same story.
Tyler comes at us with Grease too.
My little girl dreams. Well,
one day I woke up and there were flowers everywhere. My father is an actor and a writer, and he had been doing it since before I was a kid, or before I was born. Mm-hmm. Before I was a kid, I guess that still works. Sometimes my mom would be pregnant with my brother or busy with work, and he would need to babysit me, but he'd be working on set, and he would take me to set for, you know how long sets are. They're like 12 hours on an average, hurry up and wait. And I kind of just hung out at like age 4, age 5, and I kind of enjoyed it. I didn't complain. From what I remember, I just remember really enjoying it and liking being around all those adults.
And probably put you to work as like a grip or something.
I was a gaffer actually.
Okay.
And my dad got me into auditions pretty quickly. But the first two movies that like made me really want to pursue this when I was a kid, it was Forrest Gump, kind of obviously, and then it was Desperado with Antonio Banderas.
Oh yeah.
My parents showed me that movie when I was 5 years old, and I would walk around with plastic guns in my diapers and go, not yet.
I believe it.
Where is Bujo? I'm looking for a man. He calls himself Bujo.
I don't know much about potty training, but isn't 5 a little old for diapers?
Like, yeah, what's going on?
I still have mine on. Maybe it wasn't 5, but it did happen.
Sensitive subject. Yeah.
Maybe I was a little late on potty training.
It's okay, man. Whatever gets you there.
I still haven't figured it out.
And when did you catch up to El Mariachi?
Still haven't.
You still haven't.
I've seen bits and pieces, and I know all the folklore and everything. But Desperado for me was just the greatest.
Yeah.
Oh God, it was so cool.
I know. Once upon a time in Mexico. None of that. You see the follow up to.
Was that with
Johnny Depp?
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah. But It's gonna happen.
Okay. Jeff.
Two quick stories, I guess. One would be the story that got me really into filmmaking, or the roots of my interest in filmmaking. I actually don't even remember, but my father has told me he took me to see The Empire Strikes Back when it was in theaters. So, what, that came out in like 79? 80? Yeah, so I was 4 years old. I have no memory of this. But apparently when we walked out of the movie theater, I turned to him and I said, so what does the director do exactly? He's like, well, you know, he kind of tells the story and talks to the actors and sort of figures out what to do with the camera. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So I knew from when I was a little guy, That was my little guy dream. Exactly. And then the other story that comes to mind is I remember seeing my first horror film, which was, well, that's a tough one. I would say Poltergeist was probably the first scary movie that really affected me. Like, I was a very sort of sunny, happy, young child until I saw that movie, and it, like, wrecked me. I started having nightmares. I couldn't sleep. That scene where he peels his face off in the mirror just messed me up. But the really the first, like, full-on horror movie I remember seeing was Friday the 13th. My brother was going to watch it, and I wasn't allowed to watch it. But he got so scared, he asked me to watch it with him. And we actually sat in the hallway of our house where we could see into the TV room and to the TV. And we watched the movie. So all we had to do was, like, lean to the right so that the door jamb blocked our view of the TV if we got too scared.
That's funny.
I vividly remember the bit where he jumps up out of the lake and grabs the woman in the canoe. And I have not seen it since.
No way.
I have not seen it since.
No way. Yeah. Messed you up that bad?
Yeah.
Huh.
Wow.
That's awesome. What about you guys? I mean, was there a particular horror film that screwed up your brain when you were just a wee tyke?
Well, the same grandmother that would, like, put on musicals for me to fall in love with let me watch The Exorcist, the original one. I was, like, 7 or 8 years old.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, I, for as long as I can remember, have always had a fascination with, like, the dark, the creepy, the morbid. You know, I research serial, like, read books on serial killers, and, like, Paranormal Activity is one of my favorite movies. So I just have always been fascinated with, you know, the offbeat and dark.
Yeah.
But that is the first, I think that was the first horror film I had ever seen. And then I remember,
did your brain comprehend the religious ramifications?
No. At that age, no. But I remember I, at that time, had a fear of vomit. So the puking scene was the scariest part to me. And then I watched it, obviously, years later, and that's when,
Isn't there a scene in The Exorcist?
The
it's been a while since where she, like, grabs a guy's head and puts it between her legs.
She's stabbing herself with
the
cross.
Comes up all bloody.
Like, my grandmother let me watch that
and
was fully comfortable with that decision. But then, like, I remember all the Children of the Corn and Leprechaun. That movie messed me up. What about you?
I loved, the movie that messed me up when I was a kid, I was like 9, I think, when it came out. The Ring, the original of The Ring.
Okay, yeah.
I know it's not like classic or old
school.
No, it's very well done.
I think I was 9.
How old are you?
26.
Oh.
I think I was 9.
I was trying to do the math.
He was just 4 years out of diapers.
Just 4 years. I don't know if I was out of diapers.
No, that movie was great.
The Ring messed me up. There was the one scene where they open the closet door and there's that girl's face, and it literally knocked the wind out of me.
And her head tilts.
Her head tilts.
Yeah. You're talking about the remake with Naomi Watts?
Yeah.
No. But see, I knew.
I don't know.
So the actress.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, like, was there an
It was a Japanese.
Was a
oh, right. No, I thought that was Ring The Grudge.
No. They were both. They were both remade.
Oh.
Yeah.
But see, The Ring didn't scare me because I knew the actress who played the girl, DeVay.
Well, that would help.
And I'm like,
a lot.
I only see.
You're
sweet
like, she's fine.
DeVay.
She's alive.
She's
I know she's okay.
Cool.
It really freaked me out. But I think my favorite movie that really got me really scared when I was a kid that I shouldn't have seen when I was a kid was Hellraiser.
Oh, yeah. That's messed up.
And till this day, that movie is one of the coolest movies because it was, you know, it's old school and most of those effects are all practical.
Yeah.
And from a director's standpoint, that's one of the coolest, like, things you could do.
It's true. You know, the guy with all the pins in his face?
No. I see who it is. I just haven't seen that one.
We love talking about that movie because the true villain of that movie is Julia, the wife,
who
is cheating on her husband and just wants her dead lover to come back to life. Yeah. And it's really fucked up.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Okay. You'd love it.
Does working in the business, I mean, you were just talking about, you know, you recognizing someone that you knew in The Ring. Does that rob from the joy of watching scary movies these days? I mean, like, the fact that you know the process and the fact that you might know someone who's involved or...
I mean, that's the thing. Like, being an actor, it's very hard for me to sit and watch something and fully enjoy it as, you know, how majority of people watch TV, because I'm always like, ooh, continuity, her hair wasn't tucked, or, like, you know, I notice those things now, and I'm all, you know, I hate to say that, like I'm always like, ooh, I wouldn't have made that choice. Like, I'm just that person now, and that's just, like, I'm a little bit jaded, but I know I fully enjoy something when I don't question all those little things.
People ask me that all the time, and I actually believe that I enjoy films more fully as a result, because I experience them on two levels. Like, I allow myself to just sort of be emotional and feel the story and what's going on with the characters, because I certainly have to do that when I'm working on a film. So I can kind of check in at that level. But in the same time, I have this sort of secondary dialogue going on where I'm sort of looking at the technical choices and the artistic choices and thinking about it. I compare it to sort of being maybe like a sports commentator. Not that I know anything about sports, but you know, they're able to watch the match. Is that what they call it? And enjoy it. But they're also able to understand what's going on at a higher level and relay that to the audience. And so I think it, for me at least, watching a movie, I have a similar experience in that emotionally I'm engaged, but also intellectually I'm engaged on a different level.
Yeah. Well, I got to work up to that point, Jeff.
Listen. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day I can be on Jeff Wadlow's level.
Not possible.
No.
No one can be on Jeff Wadlow's level.
When you have to wear your diapers.
Okay, well, then maybe I can get there. I'm halfway there.
Well, you bring up something interesting, is that you saw The Exorcist of 7. I mean, for you guys, was there anything taboo that you could? I mean, like, I feel like if you're 7 and seeing The Exorcist, there's nothing taboo that you could not watch. Was there anything in your respective families that you just could not watch and that you just tried to smuggle and watch on your own somehow without your folks
South Park
catching?
For some reason my mom wasn't cool with. There was one episode she walked in on, and it was the song, the episode where the boys create a boy band and their hit single is called Finger Bang.
Oh, well.
And
yep.
My mom was like, no to Finger Bang. You cannot watch this anymore.
Desperado sexy.
Desperado's fine.
It's totally fine.
But Finger Bang.
I mean, my grandmother's house was clearly the place to watch everything.
The place
but my mom, was pretty strict. Yeah, it was all the MTV stuff, like Beavis and Butthead, and remember that show Undressed that would air at like 10 p.m.
Yeah. It was like an anthology, like a soapy.
Oh yeah, it was horrible TV, but I would try to watch that all the time. That's like the only thing I can remember.
Invite your friends to your grandmother's house just to be like, "Hey, Grandma, let's watch anything."
Grandma is game. Yeah.
I mean, I sort of came of age and, you know, when HBO was just becoming a thing. And so I don't think my parents fully understood the graphic nature of the content was exposed to.
Oh, on HBO?
24 hours a day on HBO.
Yeah, that was another one.
But as far as going to the movies, I definitely was not allowed to see rated R films for a long time. So we would buy tickets to other films and sneak into the rated R film. Mm-hmm. So I actually remember the first rated R film I saw in a theater was Porky's Revenge.
Yeah.
And I had bought tickets to Smurfs and the Magic Flute, which probably is an awesome porno title, right?
It does. Yeah.
Anything that was rated R in theaters was certainly taboo in rural Virginia where I grew up.
Yeah.
Midnight Run was the one that I bought a ticket for and then snuck into. And it was just the amount of F-bombs dropped in that. I came out, I was just dropping F-bombs left and right. My mom's like, what did you see? And I'm like,
Smurfs and the Magic Flute.
Smurfs and
Care Bears. So the other kind of question I had too is this, like, was there any, for you guys, was there any kind of, especially for Lucy and Tyler, was there any kind of seminal, and I'm just speaking strictly on the genre sense, was there any seminal performance that really stood out for you in any of the kind of horror films that you guys were watching when you were growing up? I mean, obviously, The Exorcist, there's obviously tons of great performances, but was there anything for you guys?
I love Drew Barrymore in Scream.
Nice.
Like, classic. That's probably my favorite. What about you?
The Exorcist was really good. I remember watching that a lot as a kid and really being, like, impressed with the acting. Because it wasn't just about like scares and like jumps and stuff. It was like mentally really scary. Nothing really stands out though.
Just that Antonio Banderas.
Just Antonio Banderas.
Desperado really.
Jeff, you've done some acting, haven't you?
Oh, Ryan.
Oh, Ryan.
You had to bring that up. Yeah, I had...
He's like, let me whip out my IMDb.
Yeah, I had one line in Pearl Harbor, which was terrifying.
No.
But that movie's epic. Are you serious? I didn't know this.
My performance was terrifying. No, yeah, I had one line in Pearl Harbor.
I didn't know
this. Listen,
Captain America.
Every male actor my age in Hollywood at that time is in Pearl Harbor. There are that many speaking parts. They were desperate. They were like, give him a line. No, I had one line in that movie.
Well, now I got to go watch Pearl Harbor tonight.
Yeah, it's actually a funny story.
What's the line?
Listen, I got paid a lot of money to say that line.
I believe it.
Now, I'll tell you the story quickly. So I was at USC in film school. I was doing a little bit of acting at the time. I had an audition. My car got towed. I missed the audition. I'd gotten like a bad grade or something. I didn't want to go. I called my agent. She was like, just go anyway. I showed up late. I get there. They're like, okay, the folding chair is the USS Arizona, and the Jap Zeros are coming from the corner of the room. So roll across the floor, get under the folding chair, and say, don't die, don't die. They're coming, or something like that. And I just looked at the camera, and I go, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And she was like, don't you want to be in the movie? And I was like, yeah, I want to be in the movie. And she's like, okay, you got to roll across the floor, get under the folding chair, and say, don't die, they're coming. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And she said, you'd be perfect for the annoyed guy. And I got a totally different part.
That's awesome.
Where I'm in line and Ben Affleck is hitting on Kate Beckinsale and I'm like getting annoyed because I need to get my physical and like go to war.
I mean, I think I know this scene.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh.
Hey, now.
Hey.
Tyler got very excited.
Tyler was very excited about that.
Yes. So I did a little acting.
It's a little long answer to your question.
Yeah.
Well,
journalist.
I'm curious. You know, you jumped onto the quote unquote horror scene with Cry Wolf.
Yes.
What would Truth or Dare Jeff Wadlow tell Cry Wolf Jeff Wadlow in terms of directing?
Hire actors like Lucy Hale and Tyler Posey.
Oh, you're just a gem.
No, I mean, look, I've learned a lot. It's been, I made that movie in 2003. So it's been, you know, it was 14 years between Cry Wolf and Truth or Dare. And it's interesting. I think one of the things that served me well in Cry Wolf was how ridiculously ambitious I was. And my producing partner, Bo Bauman, was that we just wouldn't take no for an answer. And I think I've probably learned to temper that ambition a little bit over time. But at the same time, not let go of it. Like, you know, we were making this movie and a lot of people were like, you can't do the roof sequence. You know, can't the mission be this other location, this old hotel downtown? It'll be much easier to shoot there. And I just stuck to my guns and I knew that what we needed to do to make an exciting movie. And so that sort of that Cry Wolf part of me, I think, really pushed. And ultimately, we made a film bigger than most Blumhouse movies. Yeah. You know, I had our line producer say they never had attempted anything like the roof sequence in our film before.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a little experience, it taught me like where I needed to compromise and where I needed to cut a few corners so that we could get the film done with the resources we had.
Yeah, yeah. And the roof scene turned out great.
It sure did.
Yeah.
Killed it.
Yeah, super really exciting. Well done. And you two have always kind of had your one foot in the horror arena. I mean, Pretty Little Liars has always...
Definitely undertones.
Always tracked the Italian horror influences of that show and even just like kind of the sly stuff. But then you did Scream 4.
I did.
And I was actually doing a Scream documentary at the time that Scream 4 was in production.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Bob told me not to touch anybody on that show. He was like, all right, guys, you can do the documentary, but don't you touch Scream 4. And I was like,
I want to see this. Is this documentary out?
It's on Blu-ray. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Box set. And I was like, okay. I was fully prepared to fly up to Wes.
Yeah.
And then like meet all of you guys and interview everybody. But Bob was just like, that's fine. And when you're done, can you do a Children of the Corn documentary? And I was like,
did you do
No.
I love those movies. I would be so in.
Well, we'll just spearhead one. We'll just do one.
Let's do it.
We'll do a 30-minute talk.
That experience was so fun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just feel honored that I got to work with Wes Craven before he passed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever been that nervous to walk onto a set before because it was one of those things where I didn't have to audition for this. And for me, I hate that. I love auditioning. I love proving what I can do. So I go onto a set and we've talked about this. Like I want to feel like everyone likes what I'm going to do. So I was really nervous about that. B, it's Wes Craven. He's like an icon. And three, it was like right in the middle of them filming this movie and everyone kind of knew each other. And I was like this girl that came in for a couple days. But it was cool because I don't think I realized when I'd sign on that I was going to be like the Drew Barrymore of the screen for it, like the opening sequence. And Wes was very picky with me. He gave a lot of notes. I was very appreciative of it. But
what was the one takeaway? Was there any particular knowledge that he imparted?
He was just like, own what you're doing, like be comfortable with it. And he kept telling me about my pace. Yeah. He was like, you just need to pace it up. You need to pace it up. But the cool thing about that scene is, I don't know if you've seen it, but I get my throat slit. And so we were prepared to shoot this all night, right? Because you get your throat slit, there's blood everywhere. You got to redo hair, makeup, and wardrobe. We rehearsed it like 15 times and we shot it once, and that was what they used. And so I was like, is this how this works? Is this? And they were like, no, you just did great. So I ended up getting to like leave early because we got it in one take. Wow. But yeah, it was cool to be a part. I didn't realize the fans of that, of those movies are insane. I'll get recognized from that more than, you know, Pretty Little Liars, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
The first film is one of my major influences.
Fantastic.
Like
yeah.
For Kick-Ass 2, for True Memoirs, for so many different movies in different genres.
Yeah.
I talk about Scream all the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's just got that healthy, it rides that fine line of horror and comedy and still maintains being
right,
a scary
what it does
film.
Is it's aware yeah. of the yeah. genre without selling out the genre,
yeah.
right? So it allows the audience in on the joke. And it's like, look, we know it's a movie
but
and we know we're having
like
fun, but then
is.
It's really scary too.
But that's why I feel like Truth or Dare works, because we know what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm yeah. a little close to it right now, so yeah. it's hard for me to talk about it working.
It's going to work, Jeff. But, we're putting it out in the universe.
Certainly, Scream is a major influence for me and was a major influence with Truth or Dare, because we had the luxury of having characters play a game. So mm-hmm. with Scream, they did it with a whole genre, but what we did with the game in our film is we said to the audience, you know, hey, we know that you know that mm-hmm. this is a game and you know the rules and we know the rules, but just when you think we're all playing by the same rules, we're going to change the rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice slogan.
That's what I meant, Jeff.
and Mr. Tyler, I mean, like Teen Wolf, man. That's you did a long stretch on that.
Yeah, and it got pretty horror-ish at times.
Oh, I would say so.
The majority of the show had this like great horror feel to it, and I learned so much about horror and the feel of it for like when you're filming it and directing it.
You directed episodes as well.
I directed an episode. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. It was really, really cool. Like I said, I got started acting when I was really young, and so I've been doing it for 20 years, and I wanted to do more. I wanted to have a little more control, and I expressed interest in producing early on in the show, and they got me a gig as a co-producer, and I went to meetings and stuff and kind of worked my way up the ladder, and then was like, I want to direct. Give me, please, help. Give me a direct. And
give me a direct.
And they let me have it, and it was the greatest experience, and it was a pretty brutal episode. We killed a couple of people in the episode. I had this. I was like, Mike, it was hard because I was acting in it. So that proved to be a little gnarly. Kind of complicated, but like my character was pinned to this wall with like this metal spike through his back. And then there was like this gnarly chase that we were doing. It was really cool. It was action packed. It was like horror.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
I have a question. How do you direct yourself when you're acting in something? How does that work?
Well, I knew it was going to be a little difficult and kind of time consuming because I wasn't going to be able to see every single take. And
so do you have someone you trust that's watching?
Oh yeah, big
to
time.
Like,
yeah. Okay. So I had plenty of people, like producers and our DP. I trusted all of them. And so what I would do is I would rehearse a bunch, film a take, watch the playback. And if I liked it, then I would trust everybody. I wouldn't see any more playbacks until like we were ready to move on.
I always wonder
how that works. I remember coming out of Star Trek, Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. And that was the first mm-hmm. question I asked my dad. I was like, so if Leonard Nimoy is Spock and he directed mm-hmm. that, how does that work? And my dad's just like, he's got a good team.
Yeah,
he's got
big time.
Really good team.
Really good team. Yeah. You can't do it without a team you trust and who's just been there, who knows the tone of the show. Yeah. And you can't do it with somebody who's just like come in.
Did you get a little, did you guys ever feel like any pushback from MTV about going too horrifying? Because that's a show that kind of paved the way for Scream, the television series.
First season, yeah, there was a lot of say from MTV, and they were like, pull it back a little bit, pull it back. Because like there was some moments that were really gory,
yeah.
and there were bodies being cut in half, and you can see their intestines and just innards just all fall out, and it was just ploppy and crazy. And we had to get rid of a half of a girl's body at one point because it was too gruesome. So we did get a lot of pushback from MTV from like the first season, but then they realized how much it was working, and so
then they were watching Hannibal NBC and going,
right.
"Oh, okay,
we can go there."
Of course. Porky's 3 is an R, and they get to do that on TV. It doesn't make any sense.
Jeff, trust me, you know, every day I do the, "Hey, why can't we do this in film?" And Cooper just says, "Well, it's TV."
I know, I know,
it's insane. Before we wrap up, I want to do, you know, give me one takeaway from the Truth or Dare experience, one fun story from each of you.
We had fun. I don't remember anything.
You had plenty of fun.
I watched the dailies.
I heard you.
We had the greatest time. It was really, really cool. God, there's a lot to take away from it.
I think for me is like that we actually got to go on a trip to Mexico.
Yes.
And they gave us fake phones to record whatever we wanted with, and that actually ended up in the movie, and we got to know each other. I think it's always weird when you meet people and you're like, and you're best, you've been best friends for 10 years, now pretend. Yeah. But we actually got to bond a little bit, which was fun. We were stuck at the border for about 6 hours.
Yes.
So literally just stuck in a van.
It was awesome.
We looked like a church group or something, just like trying to get across the border. So we really got to know each other that trip.
So you suggest that Blumhouse now work Mexico trips into every production.
Strictly. Just to put it in the budget.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll work on it. Jeff?
Let's go to the Caribbean.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you ever knew like that. We were definitely not supposed to do that.
But we did it.
I know.
No.
We knew we weren't supposed to do that.
And I was like, we're going to go. We're going to do it.
We
just kind of willed
It was the best decision we could have made for the film.
Yeah, by the way, only on a movie like a Blumhouse movie could we actually have done it, because we were technically not allowed to do it.
Was it illegal?
It's done. Let's just leave it. But because we were making a movie with Blumhouse, which is such an exciting experience, because it's, you sort of get the push of a big production company, but you also have the freedom of a smaller production company. And because it was a small movie, we were able to do that, and the cast was really able to bond. So then on day one, you guys seemed like great friends.
Ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. And we shot this amazing footage, which became the credit sequence.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Fun. You go. I need a minute. Yeah, I need a minute to think.
What's one thing? I have a beautiful girlfriend to take away from it.
He met beautiful Sophia.
I'm dating Sophia Ali, and
couple goals.
Yeah. Love on the roof.
Love on the roof. That's when it happened.
I'm certain of it
because you know the roof scene is just them two, and they were up there for like 4 days.
We were stuck up there alone for like four days.
Well, I took Tyler aside and said, "Hey, can you work with Sophia on these beats? I got to deal with the crane."
He's like, sure.
And little did I know, he was like, "Yeah, whatever. I'll spend all the time you want with Sophia."
Climbing the lattice of the house, right up there.
And I know I overheard a little. He was talking to her. He's like, "Yeah, I think there's like a little bit of love in your eyes in this moment." And I was like, Tyler.
I said, "You should take your shirt off."
It was from Jeff.
Yes. Stop looking at me like that. So we've been dating ever since then, pretty much.
Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. It's really awesome. Cool.
I'm glad that we're love connectors over here up on this.
Look at that. Wow. Hell yeah.
Fun little story for Truth or Dare. Man, I would say
working with Ryan and Cooper and their notes.
The endless notes. Now, what would I say about it? This is kind of fun. So after we tested the movie for the first time, I was so nervous, so incredibly nervous. And for those of you who don't know, when you test a movie, you show it to an audience, and it's very rough. The music is rough, and you're just trying to get reactions, because then you can then change the edit and you shoot additional stuff potentially. So it's an incredibly nerve-wracking moment for the filmmaking team. And we showed the movie to the audience, and they loved it. They applauded at the end of the roof sequence. Lucy has this amazing badass action hero moment that I'm not going to tell you about because I'm no spoilers, but they applauded after that. And at the end of the film, I was sitting next to Jason Blum. This woman stood up and she looked back at us, and I guess she recognized Jason, and she gave us a golf clap. She was like, "You did it."
That's so good.
Yeah, it was very, very sweet. And we have these evil smiles in the movie, and a couple of people have asked me like where that idea came from. I said, "I don't know. I've always sort of sketched this kind of evil smile when I was like doodling at restaurants or in my notebooks."
Oh my god, someone looks over and what is that dude doing?
That's where the evil smile came from. But then when we were walking out of that test screening, someone else said to me, they looked at me because I was happy and I was smiling, they're like, "That's the smile. It's your smile.
It's from you."
You do kind of have a big grin. There was an on-set photographer, and they had to send us all these pictures to approve. They snapped a couple of you, and you have the face on.
You got that.
You got the face.
Yeah. It's good.
Nice. I also remember during that first test screening, it wasn't so much like the death blows that people clapped at. It was the drama.
Yeah.
There's that one thing. There's that one reveal where someone's going to do something, and everybody just went, "Oh shit! Damn!" And that just that.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, we'll tell you.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
My God, yeah.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. And real quick question for you, Lucy.
Yeah.
Serial killer fanatic. Uh-huh. Who would you want to play? Would you want to play a serial killer?
Would I want to play a serial killer?
Yeah, there are plenty of female serial killers out
there. See, right? I sort of have fixated on the male serial killers. I mean, I know...
It's Charles Manson. Yeah.
It's Charles Manson. Wait, I'm about to read a book about the Golden State killer.
Oh.
I mean, I've read all the Ted Bundy stuff.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dahmer stuff.
You do understand the psychology of the serial killer obsession.
No, right? I don't. I think everyone thinks I'm a little cray.
I think, like, the guys are clearly the focus of the obsession usually.
Yeah, clearly.
The dangerous
I feel
type.
I feel like
Ted Bundy type.
Yeah, but I am Ted Bundy's type. Petite. Brunette.
No, but Ted Bundy is your type, is what I'm saying.
Well, he was hot.
That's what I'm saying.
Hell yeah.
Well, if you ever make it out, go to the Museum of Death up on Hollywood Boulevard.
Hollywood?
Yeah, it's on Hollywood Boulevard. It's got a giant skull right in the front, but it basically, you walk through.
I thought that was a Scientology.
No, man, no. You want to get a stark reality call, you know, just a wake-up call, go to the Museum of Death. It begins basically.
I can't believe I haven't yet.
Oh, no. It's across from, a car dealership across the street.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go in, it's kind of like you enter a funeral home, and it's like, okay, here's how they prepare the body. And you kind of go backwards. So
is
then
it weird that I get excited by things like
then
this?
Then you definitely should go because it's all the serial killer victims. Yes. And you see photos and their tools.
Real footage.
Yeah. Yes. There's all sorts of gnarly
real footage
shit.
Of people dying?
Yes.
Yes.
Anyone want to see that?
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
I'm the first in line for that.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, Ryan.
On that note.